Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Internet Marketing. Brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. This is Internet Marketing, and today I'm joined by Erica McGilvery, Senior Community Manager at Moz. Erica, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Extremely well, thank you very much. And the last time we spoke was, if I remember correctly, it was back in the summer, might have been April, just before April. I think it was episode, is it 288 or 228? I can't remember now, probably 228. We talked about joined up teams then, if you remember.
Yes, lots of teamwork.
And today we're going to be talking about sort of diversity within teams, which I've got quite a lot to say about, but I'll try and restrain my views. We'll listen to you mainly. But before we get into that, just remind us, tell us a little bit about yourself. Just remind us who you are.
So I'm the Senior Community Manager at Moz, which is a SEO content social graphing software company. We have like 5 products now. I think last time we talked, we had 2. So yeah. It's an exciting world here. I help manage a community that's over 500,000. Yeah, over 500,000 people. So it's quite large. I'm actually on a team of 6, which is amazing. And we do our social media. We do our Q&A forum. We also put on our big conferences. And we're out there connecting with anyone who's interested about online marketing, really, because we have so much education on our site. We hit everyone, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, just for a moment, I had a bit of a senior moment there, because when you were saying what you did and you mentioned 500,000, for a very brief second, I thought you had 500,000 on your team. Of course, you were talking about the community, not the team.
Well,
at Moz.
The community is our team.
I suppose it is. Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. Now, diversity within teams, I mean, diversity in general, it's a big, important subject. And we're talking today, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, about sort of diversity within the people we're communicating with, as well as the sort of the within the teams you work in. Is that right, Erica?
Yeah. So it's really, I mean, especially when I think about community building, it's really important to look at, you know, what messages you're sending out there with your marketing and what types of things you're saying about who belongs in your community and maybe some people you're not including. And I always kind of like to have the disclaimer that if you do dig into your site and you find out that maybe you are sending some signals that are telling people they can't be part of your community or that they shouldn't be buying for your company, usually it's not on purpose. There's usually never that like Darth Vader figure being like, you can't be part of this, I'm going to disclude you. It's usually just someone's oversight or someone's ignorance. And unfortunately, it can send bad signals though.
Yeah. Well, I suppose a logical place to start is you know, the website. What kind of messages are you sending out on sort of on the company website? Should we talk about that first?
Yeah, so your website, you should always look at, you know, not just your copywriting messaging, but the images that you're sending out and what that says about your brand. So a couple of things that have happened at Moz around this is if you go to our website, and it's on our current website, and you go to the About Us section, and you kind of look at our images on like our recruiting pages, it's all this like young white people who are in this like age demographic. And, you know, that sends a signal that our company is just young white people. And if you are not in that sort of demographic, you won't fit in. We're actually working on a project to get those images fixed and actually reflect the true diversity that's at Moz. I mean, we're 200 people. So we have people of all ages, you know, all races and ethnicities, all sorts of types.
Yeah.
And so that's who we are, and that should be better reflected on these hiring pages. And we, you know, and certainly as an employer, you don't want to discriminate, and we would never feel like that, but that's what the website is saying. And you can, you know, dive into a lot of websites. Like I used to work in retail e-commerce, and, you know, a lot of models that you put in clothes aren't really reflective of your actual customers and, you know, what their body types are like. Mm. You're sending signals that people aren't included, and that can be really sad, and it can be really sad for them as well.
Because this is quite closely linked to personas, which we've talked, not me and you, but generally we've talked about in the podcast before. How does it sort of affect the personas that you're using when you're sort of trying to be as sort of diverse and true as possible?
So when you're putting together personas, I always try to step back and look at what demographics you're actually putting into your personas and what that says about you. So a lot of times, you know, if you download like a standard persona, like example template, it'll have things like age, and it may have gender, may have race and ethnicity. This is very basic what we think of demographic information. And, you know, that can be great when you're digging into like highly targeted segments of your brand. But for like the general, when you're thinking about your general brand and kind of your wider audience, those standard demographics can actually build in biases in your marketing. So one thing that came up with Moz is we had a team doing personas for our main product, which is our SEO product. And they did an all company presentation, you know, after they put months and months of hard work into research and, you know, interviewed a ton of our customers. And after this, you know, all company presentation happened, the rest of the company had like two pieces of feedback for them. And the first was that all the names of the personas, usually you give the personas names, you know, to make them more friendly.
Yeah.
All the names were male names. Right. And gender has nothing whatsoever to do with who uses our product. And the other thing that came out was all these personas were accompanied by images, and the images were all of people's desks, and each one had a laptop on it and then a hand reaching out to that laptop. And all the people that they use for their hand models, they were all perceived as white. It wasn't necessarily true, but how the photograph looked, it looked that way. So the persona team, you know, they took that feedback, because, you know, gender doesn't matter, race, ethnicity doesn't matter for our customers at all, and they went and changed all the names to gender-neutral personas or gender-neutral names for the personas, and they, you know, edited the photography to have race, ethnicity, a variety of it. So
it's a tricky one, though, isn't it? How do you get the balance right? Because when you're trying to get the correct sort of proportion of like male, female, various ethnicities and things, how do you work out what sort of proportion should be male, female, etc.? I suppose that's the easy one, because it's 50%, isn't it? But, I mean, yes. The various different sort of ethnicities and things. How do you work out how to sort of pitch it?
So I like to look at it from the demographic of your target market, or the country you're in is really important, or the countries you're trying to market towards. Yeah. So with MozCon, we've done a lot of things about getting more diversity on stage. And kind of the first thing we really targeted was women, because women were completely underrepresented on our stage and in general at marketing conferences. And so that was kind of like an easy one. Like, we all knew there were just as many amazing women speakers as male speakers. And as we've sort of, we've definitely got there. Some years have been better than others, but we're pretty close to 50-50 every year. And now we're like, okay, like what's the next step of making our speaker pool more diverse? And when we've looked at it and set targets, I've set it, our targets towards demographics reflective of the entire United States, because that's where we're based and that's where the majority of our audience. So we do have, surprisingly, a huge number of great international folks who fly in for MozCon, still primarily people that live in the United States.
Mm. Now, you mentioned something a few minutes ago. You mentioned about biases, and presumably cognitive biases, which I think is what a lot of people call them. I'm just interested how that sort of fits into the whole thing about sort of when you're sort of aiming to sort of attract or serve a diverse group. How do cognitive biases work here?
So in general, I think most people in this world like to think that they're unbiased and that they're accepting of all people, no matter who they are. You know, at Moz, we have our tag fee values and we're very much like, oh, yeah, we think everyone is cool. But what you actually find is that people do have unconscious biases. Mm. And it often comes out when you're doing things like hiring or when you're putting marketing campaigns together and you don't even think about, you know, they're unconscious. So it's, again, you're not doing this on purpose. And you can tell sometimes. Hiring is like always a big one, because you can tell if you've ever like met a team where the manager and looks like all the employees they've hired.
Yeah,
that's an unconscious bias thing. We like to hire and we like to be around people who look like us and or look like the people like we love. There was like a joke for a while in an office I was in where like all the women hires under a male manager all kind of look like his wife. So these things happen. So you think like, okay, how do I fight against this?
Yeah.
How do I uncover this in myself? There's a lot of great implicit bias tests out there. Harvard actually has a bunch that you can take for free on their website. So, you know, it's not like a quiz of like which Game of Thrones character you're most like. It's actual social science. And you can discover, you know, if you are biased against certain people, and even if you think that you're open-minded. When I, for instance, took these tests, I found out that I was unconsciously biased against religious people.
Right.
Didn't really matter what religion they were. And so that's something that I need to be cognizant of, you know, when I'm working with a really large community where I'm sure a lot of these people, you know, a lot of people are religious.
Mm.
So it's something I need to take into account and make sure that I'm aware of.
Now, you mentioned hiring. That's another interesting area. Mm-hmm. I mean, not just hiring, but I mean, like, sort of getting people for sort of, you know, speakers for conferences and things like that. What's your experience been like at Moz when you're sort of trying to apply a good dose of diversity when you're hiring and getting people organized for speaking engagements?
Yeah. So the first thing is to get out of your Rolodex. So I mentioned with your, you know, cognitive biases that you're typically will like people who are like you. So those are probably the people you know. And a lot of, you know, if you look at a lot, for instance, if you look at a lot of conferences, it's a lot of the same speakers over and over again. And it's not necessarily that those speakers aren't good speakers, but it's also the fact that they are in people's Rolodexes as speakers. And people know them. So like with MozCon, sometimes I spend hours Googling and searching YouTube for videos and like going down rabbit holes of like conversations I see on Twitter when people are like recommending different marketers who are, you know, in some sort of niche that's I need for my conference. And I have discovered that for me to uncover like a MozCon quality speaker who we don't know, that's not in, you know, is not in our Rolodexes already, it takes me about 6 hours.
Yeah.
To find someone. And that's a lot of work. And a lot of people don't want to do that work. I mean, it, sometimes I don't want to do that work. It takes a long time. It takes a lot of getting uncomfortable with like kind of the rabbit holes you're normally in, you know, getting out of your network. but it can really make for a great experience. And I also think it's important to have, you know, different opportunities. So I mentioned that, you know, it takes 6 hours for me to like find someone new for MozCon. Well, we have other things that we do. We do webinars. We have a smaller conference called MozCon Local. And we also are doing these Moz Talks, which are evening events.
Yes.
A lot of times, like I love discovering new people that I don't know. I also love discovering like kind of up and coming speakers, people who are doing really great work, but maybe aren't getting that spotlight for the work that they're doing. And sometimes you're like, I don't really, you know, we have a selection committee for MozCon. And, you know, the committee will be like, well, we don't want to put someone who's really untested on such a big stage because it's in front of 1,500 people. And, you know, we all get nervous on a stage like that. But, you know, if you don't have that sort of experience, it can be even worse of a stage fright experience. And so having these other outlets, we've been able to program, you know, people we've just met, or people were like, you know, I think there's something there.
Yeah.
And let's see what they can do when we, you know, give them this small platform, and let's see what they're like. And it's been really successful for us to get to know new speakers in the industry, get to know people, you know, that we haven't encountered before, up and coming people. We've certainly found a couple amazing speakers. There's one speaker who did a webinar with me early on, and I was like, you know, she's someone that I think would be amazing. It was Dana DiTommaso.
Yeah.
Dana now speaks at every single one of our conferences because she is that incredible.
That's fantastic.
Like, she did this webinar and I was just like blown away. I'm like, oh my gosh, we have to put her on stage. And then we put her on stage and I was like, oh my gosh, can she come back like every year?
So that approach of just being agile and putting the time in and just sort of, you know, following sort of social links and things is obviously paid off there, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been really, really successful for us. Also, conference runners, we know each other. We chat, we talk about speakers. And so I've been also able to recommend a lot of speakers to people that are kind of looking to make their conferences more diverse, that are looking to get voices in there people haven't heard of. And I'm always open if, you know, anyone listening to this is like, oh my gosh, this is my problem with my conference, or this is where I struggle, feel free to reach out.
Well, talking of which, we'll probably best get on to how people can find out about you. I mean, thank you so much for talking to us again. It's a fascinating, it's a massive area. I've kept my mouth shut because I've been very vocal recently about trying to get more women in tech and rescue us from crappy code. there was a very interesting article recently that women are actually better coders than men. I linked to it in Twitter and said, that proves it. We need more women in tech. Help us out, please.
GitHub study. That was pretty crazy.
It was very, very interesting indeed. So how can our listeners get in touch with you, Erica, and find out more about you?
Yeah. So our website is just moz.com. Really easy. M-O-Z. And if you want to reach out to me directly, my email is erica@moz.com. And you can also hit me up on Twitter. I'm at E. McGilvery. It's a mouthful, but I'm sure there'll be a link in the show notes to make your life much easier.
Well, I'm going to spell your surname out, but presumably this is how it is on the email. It's MCGILLIVRAY. Is that right?
Correct. So my email is much simpler because it's just my first name at Moz.
Oh, right. Erica@Moz.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, well, that's it for today. Good listeners, thanks for listening. The show notes are in the same place as usual, sitevisibility.com/IMpodcast. We're on iTunes and Stitchers, and we'd like more reviews, actually. So if you feel up to writing a review, hopefully a good one, that would be great because it helps us to grow the audience and we can help more people and we just get the word out there. If you want to connect with me personally, just look for Dr. Pod. That's spelled out fully, DocTorPod. I'm Dr. Pod on Twitter and LinkedIn. If you want to link up with me on LinkedIn, just mention the IM podcast and then I know who you are. Two ways to get in touch with us. The email is podcast@sitevisibility.co.uk, or you can leave us a voice message at +44 1273 256 150. Well, that's it for today. So it's goodbye from me, Andy, and it's goodbye from Erica.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
and we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.